Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Hi, Alejandra. It is fantastic to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. I guess we know you as someone who's, you know, learned leadership in your time in the US Navy. You then became kind of a lawyer and then also transitioned to bringing, you know, tech and ethics together in your time at McKinsey, Quantum Black, and then Meta. I guess before we dive into kind of questions and all of that, could you give our listeners perhaps a quick intro about yourself, you know, perhaps expand on it or explain on it a little bit?
Yeah, I'm happy to share a bit more about my background. I can definitely look back and say it's been an interesting journey. As you mentioned, I spent time in different disciplines. So I've spent time as an engineer, as a naval officer, as a lawyer. And what's been really interesting kind of in retrospect is that a lot of the dominant frameworks or problem-solving approaches or mindsets within each of these disciplines and roles has presented their own limitations for solving problems. So as I've spent time in these different disciplines, I've gotten really curious. So in engineering, I got really curious around the rules around technology and why is it that we build the things we build. As a naval officer, I got really curious about leading and managing teams and what inspires people and how to keep complex systems running well. And as a lawyer, I got really curious about incentives, formal and informal, and how incentives might shape people's behaviors. And so as tech innovation kind of took off, I feel like the world had this moment where we needed to rework what good looks like. And so I started figuring out that drawing from each of these different kind of areas and disciplines and putting them together helped me to solve new novel problems that things like machine learning or social media platforms are raising. And that's how I got into this world of responsible tech and responsible innovation. And really it was a foray into very uncharted waters, which is where I like to be. So that's just a bit more about me. And I'll add that on the personal side, I live with my partner and amazingly hilarious English setter dog, Louis. And we live in this coastal town in Massachusetts, which is wonderful because I really need to be near water, as it turns out. And so I get to be near the ocean.
I think I can tell that that is very much kind of part of who you are. I like your background with, people who can't see who's tuning in on Spotify or anything like that. It says, don't give up the ship from, I'm guessing, your kind of naval side. And you can tell it's within your identity and stuff like that. So glad that you get to be somewhere where you can see the water. But yeah, I guess kind of jumping in, perhaps the kind of latter part of the stuff we're talking about, the kind of your work history. Could you speak about kind of, you know, data ethics at Meta? You know, what did you guys kind of focus on, and almost how do you embed, you know, a culture of data ethics across, you know, the whole organization?
I got to work on some really interesting topics while I was at Meta. It was really exciting to be kind of at a company that's at the forefront of a lot of digital and technological innovations. And so I got to work on privacy protective ad technology and messaging using privacy enhancing technologies, which are largely based on very recent research advancements in AI and cryptographic techniques. So that was really, really fun, very technical, but also very philosophical, because privacy means very different things to different people. I also got to work on some scenario planning and policy strategy for augmented and virtual reality technologies. And a lot of this was focused on the famed metaverse, but it was also around just, you know, the core AR and VR technologies themselves. And I also got to work on digital identity. I think for me, it hadn't really been something I thought very much about prior to working on the topic at Meta. And we ended up thinking a lot about finding the right balance between things like privacy and security and safety across multiple cultures, different government models, because how governments track identity is very different in different countries, and vulnerable populations and how people think about their comfort in being identified online or not. So that was a really, really interesting topic to dive into. And then my team also worked on neuro rights, which is this emerging area of law that's focused on protecting us against misuse or abuse of neurotechnologies. So a lot of different aspects of how we are responsible or ethical in our use of data. And the key at Meta was that all of this work that we did, in order for it to have any sort of meaning and impact, is that it had to be embedded into or somehow inform the development of our products. So a different way to put it is waxing poetic about these topics. It just wasn't enough. So we would partner internally with product engineering, design, research teams, and we'd figure out how to perhaps build in certain things into the products. Or externally, we would create or sometimes contribute to ecosystems that included academic partners, civil society, policymakers, industry groups, or other companies. And so I think, you know, to that last part of your question, how do you embed this culture across the organization? The theme is really collaboration. All the things that we did were super collaborative. And so there wasn't like one person saying, oh, we have to be ethical. It was more everybody working together to solve really, really hard technical, sociological, and sometimes legal problems, and figuring out how to create something that maybe was better than if we didn't think about all of those different facets.
That very much makes sense. And I wonder, is it almost laid out at the beginning about almost the importance of it? Because you said that kind of, you know, everyone is aware of it, thinking it, and kind of embedding it into the product. Is that something almost you're like looking for from the beginning, or something that you kind of are told and urged to do?
I think that's a really astute question, and I think a difficult one. So I think every organization is a little different on their, we'll call it maybe their journey to understanding exactly how they may be impacting and impacted by the external environment. So at a place like Meta, you know, this was a company that was breaking through barriers, creating something that had never been created before, or at least not to the scale and impact that it ultimately became. And along the way, there was a growing understanding externally by consumers, by the media, by regulators, by advocacy groups, that maybe some of the products weren't having so much a positive impact, and some of the impact was negative. And so, you know, I think everyone at this point has probably heard of the Cambridge Analytica scandal. And so when that happened, it was almost like this very, very stark wake-up call for Meta to say, oh, these things that we sometimes talk about and think about, they actually need to be more front and center to how we're making decisions internally as a company. And so I think that moment was a catalyst for a company like Facebook. And I think that happens to a lot of companies. I think there are other companies who either maybe had that catalytic moment maybe earlier on in their journey, or maybe the founders have already kind of come around to understanding or recognizing the necessity of thinking beyond just, you know, building a successful product, but rather, you know, creating a more long-lasting and positive impact in the ecosystem around them. And so I think for those companies, you don't need the Cambridge Analytica. You already have this kind of notion and this internally embedded driving force to say, okay, well, part of our business imperative is to not just create something that sells, but also something that creates value and hopefully doesn't harm people along the way. So I think that it's a journey for every company, I think. And it's kind of like you think about a person, like we all, each of us learns different lessons throughout our lives. And then suddenly you're like, oh, okay, I understand why I have to care about that. Or you start to learn the concept of responsibility, you know, when you're a teenager. I think different companies also, they go through different stages and different learning opportunities. And so, I think for Meta, they had a catalytic moment. And I think for other companies that also happens, maybe not so much in the news, but it also happens. And then for other companies, you know, for better or for worse, their founders maybe have already learned that lesson in some other previous life. And so they bring that to the business from the get-go.
Any of these companies who perhaps haven't had that moment yet or that event or anything, and they're, you know, they're thinking of probably preempting that, I guess, kind of what advice would you give to organizations who, you know, are now thinking about data ethics? You know, what are ways that, I don't know, you share information on how to apply them or anything like that?
It's a great question. And it's, I'll say one of the things that I really like to maybe avoid is focusing on that thought of ethics. And the reason is because, you know, for some people, like I love talking about things like ethics and the meaning of life and philosophy and all of this stuff. And by the way, I'm not an ethicist. Ethics is this really technically rigorous field of philosophy. And so I don't want to pretend I'm a philosopher or not, but I mean, I love that topic. However, for a lot of people, ethics is not really a topic they enjoy discussing. For some people, ethics almost feels like the morality police, or, you know, it gives this feeling of being constrained, or like, oh, I'm not allowed to do that. I'm afraid to do the wrong thing. And to me, that kind of sets a mindset that's antithetical to innovation. So I really prefer to think about these questions around, you know, data ethics or technology ethics in terms of responsible innovation, in part because the word innovation is in it. And so it by definition implies that we're venturing into the unknown. We're going to be taking risks, and that's okay. And although mitigating risks will be part of it, another part of it will also be, what is the upside? How can we shoot for the stars? How can we, you know, try to make something even better than what our initial idea might be? And so I think that responsible innovation as a framework helps people to drive innovation based on opportunity and not fear. It helps to focus on earning people's trust. Maybe that's your customers' trust. Maybe it's your employees' trust, but it's about earning trust. And then it's also about attracting and keeping your top talent. I think I've read several reports in the last several months, maybe even a couple of years, but definitely in the last couple of months, that indicate that younger generations care more about responsible innovation and responsible tech than ever before. So I think that this mindset of responsible innovation is a little bit more palatable sometimes, and more aligned with the notion of creating sometimes breakthrough technologies or new products that involve taking risks. And so I really like to think about things at a very fundamental level around how are you creating value for someone and for whom? And are you destroying value for someone along the way? And how can we avoid the destroying value part? So, you know, I think that at this fundamental level, being rigorous and disciplined around things like defining and understanding the problem you're solving, and then being clear on why you're building what you're building, ends up being super important. Sometimes we get so wrapped up in the excitement around new products or advanced technologies, and we forget these kind of core problem solving and product development skills. But I think that for all teams at any level of sophistication when it comes to the topics relating to responsible innovation. I think just being really, really focused on good problem solving skills and then understanding how you're creating value and how you might be destroying value is a great place to start. And then, you know, you can get a lot more specific about making conscientious decisions along the way, you know, how different decisions might impact users as individuals, communities as a collective, figuring out how to think about these things throughout the entire life cycle of a product or initiative at the micro level and a macro level. And it starts to sound really overwhelming. And I think one of the aversions teams have to things like, you know, responsible innovation or data ethics or whatever, is that they think it means that you're going to sit and ponder the meaning of life every time you make a decision. And that's definitely not the case. That's not really very helpful to anyone. So, you know, I think that as soon as you start getting into the more context-specific ways in which you might apply responsible innovation principles or practices, there's going to be some established guidance and practices like data minimization and the GDPR or designing user interfaces that enable accessibility. But there's also going to be some time spent on big questions like how will, for example, how will a personalized ads-driven business model impact individuals and different demographic groups over time? Will this product that we're building be a business success and leave a legacy we're proud of? And so, I think it's a really fun exercise in product development and or driving initiatives when you start to think about it as innovation in a responsible way, as opposed to like, okay, we must identify all the risks and mitigate all the risks and, you know, do everything perfectly or else. You still have to think about that stuff. But I think that the mindset, the kind of more optimistic mindset is very helpful.
Yeah, it's more kind of like a positive action rather than a negative one of like, okay, let's figure out what we can't do. It's like, okay, what can we do? And then it's almost kind of, I guess the way you're describing it is almost kind of what are the effects of that instead of like, okay, what do we need to ponder? It's like, okay, let's think about all the knock-on effects and then perhaps have a discussion on that rather than preempt it and then try and stop all of those kind of things. So I know I find that super interesting, and I think definitely going forwards, I like that kind of the innovation side of it, and kind of you mentioning it's like the exciting thing, the positive thing that can be taken forwards, which is incredible. But I guess kind of, you know, talking to, you know, our audience who are perhaps kind of trying to build that up and that kind of way of thinking, I guess, what are the key foundations that you can kind of share with our audience around kind of, I get the nuances of kind of tech innovation, kind of what is it then, what should teams and leaders be, you know, what should they be thinking about? You know, what, I guess you kind of said that, you know, it's not just a leadership thing, it's an everything thing and everyone problem. You said that kind of meta, a lot of people were just kind of, putting it into the product. It's not just the very, very high level who are thinking about this. But then I guess kind of, you know, what advice would you give to people who are, you know, who are wanting to raise their own understanding and awareness of all the things that are happening? Like, what questions should they be asking? Where should they start?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's, I think it's a great question because there's just been so much that's happened between, I don't know, the last 10 years in data-driven technologies. And so there's a lot out there, a lot of information to kind of wade through. And the dissatisfying thing that I think a lot of teams discover is that there's no playbook for this stuff yet. I think it'll come, but there's no like, here are the five things that you have to do, or like, here are the three things. People write that and they'll put it out there, but it's we're not there yet. I think things are, you know, who would have predicted generative AI, for example, and the splash that it made? And so a lot of the things that people had decided were best practice for AI generally kind of applied to generative AI, but then kind of didn't, because generative AI broke a lot of those models. And so I think that, you know, the first thing I'll say is that an element of curiosity sounds so basic, but I think it's a really important place to start for everybody. I can't tell you the number of teams who maybe their area of expertise is in a particular kind of technology, or maybe somebody who's just like super focused on engineering or super focused on design, and that's their focus, and they're not curious about something like responsible tech, not because they don't care about it, but because they think it's somebody else's issue. I think the moment that we all can become curious about learning about some of this stuff, this responsible innovation stuff, most people very quickly discover that it is very connected to exactly what it is that they do day to day. And so I do think that it can be a little bit daunting to find good resources to get curious and then get engaged. And so a really great place to start, and this is going to probably sound really dorky, but there's so much great content out there, a lot of bad content too, but a lot of great content out there. You could just start with a quick internet search, any combination of like data, ethics, trustworthy, responsible innovation, just to see the kinds of results that you get, and you can kind of click through and maybe see if something grabs your attention. I know that sounds super open-ended, but it's just a really great place to start if you don't know where to start. And then, you know, the next thing would be, there's some great newsletters, websites, podcasts. They range from the more policy focused to the more technically focused to the more humanities focused. And there are way too many for me to give you the comprehensive, like, here's the list of the top 10 things you should listen to. I actually tried to do that before this and I gave up because I was like, well, I love this one for this, but, you know, I have gotten more interested in this other podcast recently. So I think a really great thing to do is to talk to other folks who perhaps are already into this topic and ask them what they listen to. And I will share a few of the things that I think are great. They're not my comprehensive favorites. They're a sample of some of the things I've been reading or listening to a lot these days. But on the more kind of technical side, there's a podcast called the TWIML AI podcast. And this is more about the tech. And then sometimes things around responsible innovation and responsible AI come up from time to time. And then way over on the policy end of the spectrum is one called Tech Policy Press. That's another great podcast. On the newsletter side, I think The Algorithmic Bridge by Alberto Romero is really good. And then Stratechery by Ben Thompson is super interesting. Neither of which is squarely about responsible innovation, but both of which kind of raise some of the topics from time to time. And then the OECD, which is an influential international organization, and then MILA, which is an AI research community in Quebec, they both have great websites with really fantastic resources. So that might be a good place to get people started. But I say that, say, what should teams be thinking about was your original question. I think the first thing is that people have to get curious about this stuff, because if you have a team who doesn't think it's their job to think about responsible innovation or responsible technology, then you can put in all the governance, all the rules, all the processes. You could do all the things you want in the company, but people aren't engaged with it. They're not really going to be committed to really thinking about how to do this stuff. So curiosity, I think, is the first thing. And then I think, you know, the other thing I'll say, without getting like too in the weeds, is that this is kind of how I think about it. A product team, let's say we have a product team building a new digital product. It's aiming to build products that are feasible, you know, feasible to build, desirable, so somebody will buy them, and viable, something that you can actually create. And that's just basic product management. When you start to drill down into what feasible, desirable, and viable mean, especially when you think about those things at scale and on longer timelines, you quickly realize that those products also need to be safe and trusted and empowering. If a product isn't safe, people aren't going to use it. If a product isn't trusted, people will choose not to use it. And if a product is not empowering, people will find other means to pursue their livelihoods or create value in their lives or whatever. So to me, responsible innovation is a business imperative. It is part and parcel of building a good product that you're going to sell or provide to some sort of market. And so in addition to curiosity, I think it's really helpful for teams to start to think about how some of this responsible innovation stuff is a part of their everyday job, not a separate thing that they punt to a lawyer or a compliance professional, who will have a really important role to play, but should not be the only one thinking about doing things responsibly. And you can imagine how that kind of dynamic might arise in an organization. So I think they're so basic and they're so fundamental, but I think that those mindset shifts actually pay dividends as opposed to being really formalistic about how it is that we do responsible innovation. The formalistic stuff matters too, but if you start there and forget the mindset part, it's just not going to be, it's going to be all the responsible innovation stuff will be a check in the box, not a really meaningful exercise.
Yeah, it becomes kind of, you know, if you get people invested in it and for them to see the importance, I guess it's less effort later on when you're not kind of chasing people down. It's like, oh, they'll do it anyway. They understand the whole purpose of it, which is, yes, I guess that almost, it makes it, once you say it, you're like, oh, well, yeah, duh, like it makes sense. But until you have someone kind of such as yourself to kind of really hammer down how, you know, relevant it is to everyone and, you know, everyone's job, it's like, okay, fair enough. But yeah, just on that kind of curiosity piece, I mentioned, you know, at the very, very beginning, your kind of your career and your career moves, and you mentioned how kind of curiosity is, you know, there throughout. It's like the thread throughout. You've made some incredible shifts. And I just want to just kind of for the little bit at the end, almost on those shifts, how did you find moving from, you know, like an advice firm, like, you know, McKinsey, Quantum Black, to, you know, the opposite, Meta, and, you know, going from, you know, all of your different moves, kind of what advice would you give to others who are, you know, making that shift or thinking about making a move?
I think that, you know, you already mentioned, for me, the moves were very driven by curiosity. And so I received great advice, which is to, you know, try to be self-reflective and try to every so often take a step back and ask, like, am I doing the things I love to be doing? You know, am I fulfilling my dreams? You know, that sort of thing. And so I think the first bit of advice would be to do that every so often. People have different ways of doing self-reflection. Whatever way works for you is fantastic. And I think part of that inquiry should be, especially if you're considering shifting somewhere, like, do I really need to go? Like, do I really need to leave? Or am I running away from something? Am I running towards something? I think it's a really helpful exercise because being in an organization for a while is really wonderful. You build these incredible relationships. You learn so much from your colleagues. You probably get to have different roles within that organization and learn a lot that way. But for me, when I did these self-inquiries, I discovered that these other opportunities that were in a different organization doing something completely different was in fact the right opportunity for me at that time. So I think, you know, this isn't about actually doing the shift, but deciding to do the shift, the advice is, you know, have those moments of self-reflection and really, really try to understand if you're running away from something, which usually isn't great dynamic, or if you're running towards something. And then as part of that, does moving organizations play the role that I think it's actually playing, or am I just, you know, being completely, I don't know, doing it on a whim? So that's one thing. I think another thing is that every time you move organization, you know, move from one organization to another, I think it's really important to take the time to understand the culture and the context of where it is that you're working. So it's really easy to go from one thing to another and then just be like, okay, I'm here, I'm ready to get started, and kind of jump into things without really understanding what's going on around you, like what different teams are doing, how they interact, how they interplay. Practically speaking, what are the power dynamics in the organization? You know, who are the biggest catalysts for making decisions? And, you know, who might your close partners be, cross-functional partners be? I think it's really important to take the time to do that. And I will say that it took me a while to pick that up. Like I didn't do that my very first transition. Like when I moved from my first law firm to my second law firm, I didn't take the time to do that and learned the lesson that it's really important to do that. So I think that's another really important piece of advice, because if you don't understand the context and the culture of where you're working, it's probably going to limit your impact and might even feel frustrating. And then you'll be like, why did I move? Why did I do this? It can be hard. It can be hard to move across organizations, but I think that if you're really thoughtful about why you're doing it, and then once you get there, really take the time to soak in your new environment, I think it can be a lot easier. And then, you know, I'll also say this, from an advisory role to, like, you know, being in an organization where, you know, I'm probably hiring people to advise me, one of the things that was a really interesting shift was when you're in it, it's a lot harder to be objective than when you're advising. And then when you're advising, it's a lot harder to be truly empathetic about what is driving the team that you're advising. And so if you're an advisor, what I learned was, make that extra effort to try to have that empathy. And again, try to understand the context in which your whoever you're working with is operating. And then when you're in it, do your very, very, very best to, from time to time, take a million steps back and try to be objective about what's going on. And if you can't do that and you have the budget, hire someone who can, and then listen to them.
Absolutely fantastic. And I have four quick questions for you. It was like quick fire questions, just, yeah, to learn a little bit more about you that isn't solely linked to what you do as your job or what you have done. So I'll dive straight into them with kind of question number one. As a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be all the things, everything. I wanted to be a rock star. I wanted to be a marine biologist. I wanted to be a soccer player. I think I went through a phase when I wanted to be a ballet choreographer. And note that none of these included lawyer or engineer or military officer.
You kind of stumble on the things with, like you said, with curiosity and just kind of trying stuff out, and that leading to other things. Do any of your hobbies influence your professional life?
I think they do indirectly. So I spend time working out, playing guitar. I draw, I read. And I think the way they indirectly influence my professional life is that they help to clear my mind, or spark new ideas, or, you know, they involve creativity. And so, I don't know, it makes room in my brain for, new ideas and new approaches or new perspectives, around how to solve problems at work. It also just makes me happier.
I guess it's also that quality of downtime and reset, so that when you kind of have to go back into work, it's like, no, I do feel refreshed. So
yeah.
What is the best advice that you've ever been given?
I think I've been given a lot of great advice, but there's something someone recently, relatively recently, shared with me, which was, don't identify myself as my job. So like, try to keep yourself and what you do separate from each other. And it's really hard. It's really, really difficult to do, especially I read about that at first when the advice was shared with me. It happens a lot to veterans where they're like, okay, well, I am a former military person. How do I disintegrate that part of my identity with myself? It happens a lot with people who work really hard or who have a vocational profession of some sort. So it's probably going to be a lifelong journey, but I think that's a really great and important piece of advice.
Definitely agree. And I know because, you know, you're at your workplace or similar for most of the waking hours, I guess. And it's so hard to, like, when people ask me, how are you doing? How's your day? How's your week going? To not talk about work and what you do. But like you said, it's really important to note that you aren't your job. There's a bit more. And, you know, you should to make time for some more to reset and everything like that. To do the art, the creative stuff, if that's your thing. So, no, I very much get it. And I'm nodding along. But yeah, I have one last question for you. It's a question that everyone on the podcast gets asked. It's a bit of an odd one, but we think it, you know, but there's some creative answers in there and it tells us a lot about a person. So I'll ask it to you. Alejandra, on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
Assuming 10 is the weirdest, I'd be up there, I think. Maybe 7 or 8. I think it's been really interesting over the years. I've had to learn that the way I structure thoughts in my head are not the way everyone understands them. So like, I have to go through a lot of filters to like get out what I want to say in a way that people understand, which I think is fine. I rather like the idea that I structure things differently in my head than some other people, because it usually allows for kind of unique thoughts to pop up. And then also that activity of translating in my mind then allows me to also see when one person and another person are talking and they're not like hearing each other. I'm like, hold on, guys. I know what's happened here. Hold on. This is what happens in my head. Let me help you guys out.
It helps you understand what you're trying to discuss from all angles. So it's become, you become a better bridge for anyone else. Nice. Wonderful. Well, I've kind of asked all the questions that I wanted to. I know we could have dived into a lot more, but, you know, it's a good starting point. I certainly learned a lot. I'm definitely going to take away the kind of responsible innovation as a term. I really like that, and kind of discussing things in that positive mindset. But I also learned so much more. So thank you so, so much. I really enjoyed talking to you on the podcast. And
thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun. And I really enjoyed having this conversation with you. So thank you for inviting me.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.